I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. After a long and contentious primary and caucus season, the Republican National Convention is finally underway in Cleveland, Ohio, a Rust Belt state like Pennsylvania. Donald Trump won every county in the Commonwealth, and the Pennsylvania delegation, more than 70 Republicans, are there in Cleveland. Also there is our own Dave Davies, senior reporter at WHYY and blogger at newsworks.org. He's covering the Pennsylvania delegation, the convention, and will be our eyes and ears this week, along with Newsworks blogger Dick Pullman. And Dave, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be with you. Greetings from Cleveland.
Absolutely. We pulled you away from House Speaker Paul Ryan talking to the Pennsylvania delegation. What has he been telling them?
It was interesting, Marty. You know, the morning caucus is a regular feature of state delegations. They all typically stay at the same hotel and have a breakfast caucus and try and get a speaker of some renown. It's significant and a measure of Pennsylvania's importance to the party that Paul Ryan chose one of his four mornings at this convention to speak to Pennsylvania. And it's all about the importance of Pennsylvania in this election. I can tell you a little bit about what he said. And
sure.
What was interesting to me, Ryan went a good 12 minutes into his speech before even mentioning the name Donald Trump. And I happen to know that he was at a fundraiser here in Philadelphia in June and never mentioned it at all in his remarks. At least that's what I was told by one of the Republican insiders who was there. So he wasn't there pumping Trump per se. And in fact, his message was in some ways a striking contrast to Trump's message in his speeches, in that Trump, you know, talks about how he will turn America around, bring our jobs back from overseas, get us better trade deals, defeat ISIS, make us strong. But he rarely says much about how this is going to happen. I mean, in fact, hardly anything. His appeal is, you've got a guy who's successful, who knows how to get things done, and trust me, it's going to happen. Ryan began by saying, you know, we're not going to win this race by default. We're not just going to be able to rely on distaste or anger at Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. We are going to need a message and a program. And then he spent the rest of his speech, at least until I had to run upstairs to speak with you, talking about the congressional agenda on fighting regulation, on a specific alternative to Obamacare. And that was what he was saying. We're not going to get where we need to get by just criticizing. And I think in a subtle way, that's a departure from Trump's approach.
Well, certainly conventions are about trying to bring the party, whether it's Republican or Democratic Party, together. Dave, just based on what you just said, are we seeing a party at war with itself or some degree of skirmish with itself?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a huge divide here. I mean, the fact that so many of the prominent leaders of the party are not here. I mean, you've heard about George Bush and both Bushes and Mitt Romney. I mean, if you look at Pennsylvania and New Jersey's congressional delegations, most are not here. In Pennsylvania, you have 13 Republican members of Congress and one senator. Of that number, six we know of are here. Others are going fishing or finding ways to be elsewhere.
Or mowing their lawn,
New Jersey,
right? Yeah, no, go ahead.
Yeah, right. In New Jersey, it's five of six. And so there is clearly some discomfort, particularly among those who are in competitive reelection battles with the top of this ticket. And that's not news. What's also interesting to me is that, I mean, you know, Marty, we've talked about this before on the show, that Pennsylvania's Republican delegates are elected directly by voters without being committed on the ballot to one candidate or another. So you really have people who are officially uncommitted and who are a mix. Some are passionate followers of Donald Trump. Others are here who came committed to another candidate. And a few that I've spoken to are very, very uncomfortable with Trump privately. They won't say it on the record. So we're kind of seeing them. It sort of reminds me of somebody, I don't know, trying to come to terms with an arranged marriage in a bit. You know, well, you know, he's kind of good looking and well. So you're seeing that. But officially, everybody's united. And I think they do want to break the drought. I mean, Pennsylvania has not gone for a Republican presidential candidate since 1988. And they think they want to get that changed.
This gets us into some of the details and the complex details. At the convention, the Stop Trump movement was essentially stopped by the Republican Party. Does that leave delegates from Pennsylvania sort of forced to support Donald Trump, or we won't know for a couple of days?
Yeah, I mean, there will, I assume, be some dissident votes cast. I mean, you know, it's interesting. Donald Trump did win all 67 of Pennsylvania's counties, but lost one congressional district, barely. That's the second in Philadelphia and Montgomery County. So some of those folks may cast a vote for Kasich. Kasich, interestingly, will be the speaker at the Pennsylvania breakfast on Wednesday. And I think Ryan and Kasich's appearance here is a way of saying, Pennsylvania, you are important, and we're going to make sure you get to hear from somebody who we all respect and can all embrace, particularly in the case of Ryan. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many dissident votes there are cast. It doesn't appear there will be any opportunity for anyone to be off message at the podium microphone. That was settled in a rules committee battle, which had to do with this Free the Delegates movement. If a certain number, if 28 of the 112 rules committee members had voted for that, there would have been a floor fight. That's not going to happen. So in front of the TV cameras, it will all be clear and on message, except to the extent to which Donald Trump tweets something that distracts from it.
Yes, and stay tuned for that. Dave, you interviewed a couple of delegates going to Cleveland. I'm sure they're there now. A couple of them telling you that they were going to be carrying guns. It is an open carry state. Have you talked to them since then? Do they still plan on doing that? Certainly in light of the police shootings in Baton Rouge yesterday.
Yeah, there were actually four that I had on the record saying they were planning to bring weapons, and others, I'm told, had that commitment. So far, I've met only one, Ash Kari, who had not I don't think he'd ever fired a handgun in his life. He's a 60-something Indian-born engineer, but felt he was going to do this both as a statement in support of Mr. Trump's views on the Second Amendment and because there is some concern that demonstrations might get out of control and these folks want to be in a position to defend themselves, even with lethal force. He would not tell me whether he is carrying a gun. He said, all I will tell you is that I got my permit. I'll show it to you if you want to see it. And he said, I am not a vigilante. This is all about fair and reasonable precaution and defense of the Second Amendment. So I think, honest, the way the logistics of this work, Marty, where the Pennsylvania delegation is staying 15 miles from Cleveland, so they take buses in, and so they can't take the guns into the arena, and I don't think bus drivers particularly want to be storing a mobile arsenal so people can go into the arena. So I think that, practically speaking, there will be little chance for them to go walking around with guns. But I'll keep my eyes open, and I'll let you know what I see.
Please do. Both cities, Cleveland and Philadelphia, next week expecting thousands of protesters. This is Monday morning, Dave. How visible, how vocal have the protesters been so far?
Not visible so far, but it's a little hard to keep track of, Marty. There are three different designated protest areas and a fourth parade route. And after a legal battle with the ACLU, Cleveland authorities have made it clear that, you know, anybody who wants to start a protest on the sidewalk has a right to do so, and then what happens, happens. So I think there is some apprehension about people who are determined to disrupt things, what they might be up to and whether the police will be able to handle it. And, you know, given the events yesterday in Baton Rouge, I think that adds, and then, of course, the attack in Nice over the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt some unease about this. I have to say, I went to the opening reception for the delegates last night, and everyone seemed comfortable. The law enforcement folks seemed relaxed. There was a security line to get in of more than 100 yards, but so far it seems to be going calmly.
That very familiar voice is Dave Davies, senior reporter here at WHYY, blogger at newsworks.org, and he's joining us from Cleveland, Ohio. And we will be checking in with Dave and also with Newsworks blogger Dick Pullman this week as we talk about what's happening in Cleveland. Of course, the Republican National Convention getting underway there. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Dave, I heard you tell Jennifer Lynn this morning that there were four places you had to go to get security. Do you think, I'm assuming you covered the 2000 Republican convention here in Philadelphia when the Republicans were in town. Just how much more security is there, would you say?
Oh, it's certainly heightened. I mean, that was before 9/11,
exactly.
So it's all different after that. And I just think, you know, as politics becomes more professionalized and more people get involved, it's just harder. There are actually probably fewer reporters covering things than there were 20 years ago, just because the media in this country have been under such duress. But, Yeah, no, it's they have credentials for the Pennsylvania events, credentials to get into the NPR station here where we have some workspace, different kinds of credentials, plus Secret Service credentials to get into the arena. There are a different set of credentials for the arena every day. It's a little crazy.
How would you compare Cleveland and Philadelphia, the city that you know so well?
Well, I think in some ways they're a lot alike. I mean, they're working class towns that used to have a manufacturing base that's mostly left, and the cities have struggled to rebound. The downtown, I mean, I've been to Cleveland a couple of times, and I think it's really impressive. You know, unlike us in Philadelphia, they managed to build downtown ballparks, and,
oh, really?
And I think that really makes it a special place. It should have happened here. It didn't. But beyond that, it's really hard to say. It is a slightly smaller place. I mean, the police force has brought in hundreds, I think maybe thousands of officers from different jurisdictions around the state to deal with this. So, I mean, they're, you know, have a huge tiger by the tail in this thing. And given what an unconventional and provocative candidate Trump is and how high passions are on both sides of this, as well as the violence we've seen committed by police and against police in recent years and all the strong feelings about that, it's just hard to know what to expect. I'm sure the people in Cleveland the officials will be breathing a big sigh of relief come Friday if this all goes without major incident.
So what are your plans for the rest of the day?
Well, when we're finished, I'm going to go down and just catch up with the caucus who heard Paul Ryan speaking. I'll file some material for our listeners in the afternoon that eventually go into town and either hit some demonstrations. There's a pro-Trump demonstration this afternoon, as well as many others, or go to the convention site and get ready for the evening's events.
And who's speaking? I believe Melania Trump is speaking tonight.
Melania Trump is speaking tonight. And as well as a bunch of other speakers, a number of them are related, have connections to the Benghazi attack. The theme of tonight is keeping Americans safe. So you'll hear a lot about Hillary Clinton and what she allegedly failed to do in response to or in advance of the Benghazi attack. And so there'll be a lot of that. But Melania Trump will, I think, be the headliner.
Well, on that note, my thanks to you, Dave Davies, for getting us started this morning. Always enjoy talking with you, Dave. Thanks for joining us on Radio Times.
My pleasure, Marty. Talk to you Wednesday.
Yes, indeed. And that is Dave Davies, senior reporter at WHYY, also a blogger at newsworks.org. And as I said in introduction, he will be joining us and filing reports for WHYY and for Newsworks throughout the week. He is, of course, in Cleveland, Ohio, for the Republican National Convention. And Dick Pullman is there as well. He's a blogger for WHYY's Newsworks, and we'll be checking in with Dick every other day, and Dave every other day, as they report from Cleveland, Ohio. We're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to be talking with two Ohio residents who can tell us much more about their state. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. While Donald Trump won every county except one in Pennsylvania's primary this spring, that wasn't the case in Ohio, where the governor, John Kasich, beat Trump by more than 10 percentage points. He has not endorsed the presumptive Republican presidential nominee. Ohio and Pennsylvania are both called Rust Belt states. Both are considered key this election season to winning the White House. Well, we wanted to know more about our neighbor to the west, Ohio, as the RNC gets underway in Cleveland. And we asked David Cohen and Nick Castell to join us. Nick is reporter, producer at WCPN Idea Stream, and that's Cleveland's public radio station. And Nick, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Also with us is David Cohen, and he's a professor of political science at the University of Akron. And Dave Cohen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
Let me begin with you, Nick, and the sort of overall question, I guess, that gets asked on a Monday morning before a four-day event such as the one that's happening in Cleveland. Is Cleveland ready for the delegates, the delegation, Donald Trump, and the protesters?
Well, that's the question we've been asking for months and months now. When you drive through downtown Cleveland, you see security barriers everywhere. There's big, tall metal barricades creating walls and roadblocks and all sorts of things that you don't see in Cleveland on a regular basis. There are numbers are always a little hard to come by, but Cleveland police were estimating that there might be as many as 2,500 officers from out of town here just to provide security outside of the convention center. There's also Secret Service and all sorts of other law enforcement agencies that are in town as well to provide security. So there are a lot of police here, a lot of barriers and barricades all over downtown Cleveland to get ready for protests or whatever else might happen.
And have they ramped up security within the last 24 hours after the shooting of policemen in Baton Rouge? Nick?
You know, I think it's hard to tell exactly what they've done, you know, to adjust to those situations. They say that their plan is fluid. They are always adapting to things that happen and what they're aware of. I think they were already thinking about those things going into the convention, given what happened in Dallas. So I think those things were already on their minds. As of right now, though, the Cleveland police are having a press conference as we speak, actually, talking about their security preparations. They say only one person has been arrested so far. It was someone who tried to take a trooper's gas mask.
Oh, really?
So, so far, one arrest.
All right. Dave, let me turn to you. And interestingly, the governor, your governor in Ohio, has not endorsed Donald Trump. Will he be – does he have any speaking presence at the convention this week?
Not scheduled as of yet. I highly doubt he's going to officially endorse Trump. I think it's not only a calculated move in that I think that Governor Kasich is probably betting on a loss by Trump, and he's planning on running in 2020. But also he fundamentally disagreed with many of the things that Donald Trump said during the primary campaign and many of the issue stances he has. And I just think he has some real fundamental differences that are going to prevent him from supporting the ticket.
I noticed he was speaking at the NAACP convention that was in or that is in Cincinnati. He was speaking yesterday. Does that tell us something about your governor, David?
Well, you know, it's interesting that he's speaking and Donald Trump declined that invitation. So I think that, you know, John Kasich very much ran as an inclusive Republican, I believe, in the primaries. And I think it wasn't a show. I think the governor is definitely a little bit more moderate than his political party is at this particular time in history. And I think he's going to continue to hold kind of the center right. And if he indeed does decide to run for president again, I think you'll see similar policy stances that he took in this primary season. And he believes it's the place that his party needs to go for the future.
Nick, Governor Kasich won, I think, about 47% to Donald Trump's 35% at the Ohio primary. He has something like 66 delegates. Do you know what they're going to be doing this week?
Well, they're going to be at the convention, whether they like it or not. And, you know, I'm not exactly sure if they've got anything different planned from all the other delegates. Of course, they've got their morning breakfasts. They'll be attending convention events. Sort of the question, you know, there's some reporters who got together last night, and some of the question we were kind of bouncing around was, well, what exactly does the delegation do if they're not actually pledged to Trump? Do they still, when the microphone comes around to them, say, well, we pledge our 66 delegates to John Kasich? That kind of remains to be seen, and I'm not, you know, a super expert in all of the procedural rules of how these conventions work, so I don't know what they're actually required to do and what they might just choose to do, but I do think some delegates, they're here. That doesn't mean they like Donald Trump.
I think it depends on if the governor releases them or not. If he releases them, they're free to vote for Trump or whichever way they want. If he doesn't release them, I believe that they're bound to vote for Governor Kasich.
I do remember, Nick, and I'm sure you do as well, going back to all those debates that we watched and how uncomfortable and frustrated your governor, Kasich, looked, in many ways feeling that he wasn't getting the attention that he deserved. But I'd just be curious about your analysis of how he felt about the process for the nomination.
I think that's something Kasich has said in other venues as well, that he felt he didn't get the attention that, of course, that he wanted. You know, they originally were really banking on doing very well in New Hampshire and using that success to springboard the governor forward. They did a lot of ground organizing in New Hampshire. They ended up not doing as well as they had hoped, and that kind of became the story of the whole primary season. And I think Kasich did wish that he had more attention, but it's hard to do when you've got the, you know, another person in the room named Donald Trump who's soaking up all the oxygen.
I was about to say, ahead, I mean, Dave. Trump completely, as Nick just said, soaked up all the oxygen in the room. Kasich did fairly well in New Hampshire. He finished second, which surprised a lot of people in the national media. And the spotlight did start to shine on him after New Hampshire. But the problem is, with such a controversial candidate in Trump, even after New Hampshire, you know, Trump essentially stole the spotlight. You can look at his free media versus the rest of the candidates. I think it was three times the entire field put together. And it's just really hard to compete, especially when you are a somewhat unknown governor from the Midwest. Even though you are without a doubt qualified to be president, it really is a lot about how much media attention you get, especially in those debates.
Are you saying, Dave, that the media gave him a free ride?
Trump?
Yes.
Without a doubt. But I'm not blaming the media, because Trump also equals ratings. And, you know, we live in a time of corporate media. These companies need to make profits. And certainly, you know, with Trump, I mean, the money was rolling in. I mean, it was reality television brought to the presidential stage. And, you know, people just can't turn this guy off. I mean, when he's at a rally, you know, even liberal Democrats want to watch him, because you just never know what he's going to say next.
It is interesting, Nick, that your governor so far has not endorsed, and it's not clear that he's going to have much of a role to play at the convention, whereas others who were equally as critical, I'm thinking of Senator Cruz, he's going to be one of the speakers. What does that tell us about the governor of Ohio?
Well, I think once he sets his mind to something, he wants to stick to it. And, you know, I'm just thinking of – traveled to McKees Rocks outside of Pittsburgh a couple of months ago to talk with people. That's where Kasich is from. And I talked with people there about what they thought of him. And I sat down with some people who were high school friends of his, and they just absolutely loved Kasich. And they seemed almost offended by the idea that Kasich was not doing very well. And I think that there's just some element of Kasich is going to stick to his position right here. And if he says at this point that he's not, you know, yet supporting Donald Trump, I would be very surprised if he turned around in two days and said that he is.
I would be shocked as well. And I was just going to say that he is someone that sticks to his principles. I think he has fundamental philosophical and moral differences with the presumed nominee. And I think, you know, Kasich is somebody that really sticks to his own ideological bearings. I think he's very comfortable in his own skin, and he's really not a political opportunist. And I think, you know, somebody like Ted Cruz, it's just a lot easier for them to pivot.
Let me quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's David Cohen, professor of political science at the University of Akron. Also with us, Nick Castell. He's a reporter, producer at WCPN Idea Stream, and that's Cleveland's public radio station, joining us obviously from Cleveland, Ohio, where the Republican National Convention getting underway this week. We are curious to know about our neighbor to the west, more about their politics and their expectations for this convention. Of course, Philadelphia hosting the Democrats next week. And you can join the conversation. Any questions or comments you might have for our guests, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Nick, let me go to you. I know the Cleveland Police Union has urged Governor Kasich to suspend the open carry gun law in, I guess, Ohio, but specifically in Cleveland. Can you get us up to speed on that?
Yes, I believe it was the head of the police union who made that request, and I think I have seen statements from Kasich's office essentially saying, well, he can't arbitrarily suspend portions of state law at someone's request. And there's sort of a history here as well when it comes to open carry in Ohio. You know, Cleveland used to have its own gun laws that were more strict than the state-level laws. And the state legislature passed something in 2006 essentially saying we want state laws to be the laws for the entire state when it comes to guns, and we don't want any local municipalities to have their own regulations. That case went to the Supreme Court and the Ohio Supreme Court. And in 2010, the Ohio Supreme Court ruled in favor of the state legislature, essentially invalidating Cleveland's gun laws and prohibiting them from passing their own regulations that would be stricter than the state's. So at every turn, when people have asked the Cleveland police, are you going to allow people to open carry guns at this convention? They say, well, that's the law of the land. That's the law of the state of Ohio. And we can't do anything to change that.
I mean, there are interesting sort of parallel gun laws in Pennsylvania as well. Dave, but if you're living in Ohio, how often do you see people open carrying?
You know, I haven't seen it much personally, but, you know, for example, several months ago, there was somebody that was carrying a semi-automatic weapon near the University of Akron campus in Akron and doing it just to show that they could. And there was nothing that the local police could do despite, you know, numerous calls coming in complaining about somebody carrying a weapon like that. So it is the law of the state of Ohio. I'm not a Ohio constitutional expert, but, you know, I think the governor's probably right in that he can't just suspend state law because of a request.
I'm sure you've seen the headlines, which is you can go to Cleveland, you can bring your gun, but you can't bring a can of tuna fish or a soup can. You can't bring tennis balls.
Or an umbrella, which we needed this morning.
Right.
Or an umbrella. It's obviously raining there in Cleveland.
Yeah.
I mean, the headlines are attention grabbing for sure, Dave. And obviously, it tells us how this law in Ohio kind of intersects with security concerns.
Mm-hmm. If you think about it, it's absurd, isn't it? And, you know, Ohio's not the only state that has laws like this, but you're exactly right. And, you know, the security forces would love to know that the people here are not carrying weapons, but you know, state law prohibits them from doing that, except in the U.S. Secret Service zone around the convention hall and around the convention center, because that is a national security space. And there, you know, it's federal law that trumps state law.
You want to weigh in on this at all, Nick?
Well, I was going to say, for what it's worth, and I, of course, am one of those reporters who has written stories about the fact that guns are going to be allowed inside the so-called event zone outside of the convention area. I believe so far only one person has showed up at Cleveland Public Square open carrying a long gun. For all of the attention that's been paid to this issue, we have just one person who's done it so far. Doesn't mean it won't change during this week, but to date, only one guy.
And how many protesters are expected, Nick? Do you know?
Oh, I have heard all kinds of numbers, and I have no way of knowing whether they're accurate or where they came from. I think it's probably fair to say thousands of people will be expected here throughout the course of the week. There are lots of different organizations representing a lot of different interests and causes who have applied for permits to be able to protest and march down the official sanctioned – they call it the parade route, but it's the protest route. It marches across a bridge and kind of under a highway overpass. But I would expect there will be a lot of other people who show up, and they want to protest in other venues. You know, the city of Cleveland faced a lawsuit from the American Civil Liberties Union over the restrictions the city had put in place for this. One of the things the city agreed to was to shrink down the size of this event zone, where things like tuna cans and tennis balls will be banned. Another thing the city had to do was acknowledge that people can protest on the sidewalk anywhere they want. It's a public right of way, and you can walk up and down the sidewalk with your sign. So I would expect that we'll see people elsewhere too, and not just in the approved zones.
Interestingly, looking for some parallels between Cleveland and Philadelphia, also the ACLU got involved in this city to ensure that protesters had more room to carry out their protests. Let me go back to you, Nick, though. And I know the Justice Department also investigated the police force in Cleveland. This was, I don't know if it was after police shot Tamir Rice, but certainly an investigation about the use of excessive force. Help us understand what the feds were looking into.
Sure. This was an investigation actually that was requested in late 2012 and went on through 2013. The final report came out, as it happens, shortly after the shooting of Tamir Rice in 2014. The Justice Department investigation found – it's called a pattern and practice investigation. And what they're looking for is, does the police department exhibit a pattern and a practice of violating people's civil rights? And what this report said was, we think there's enough evidence to make that case, that the Cleveland Police Department has a pattern and practice of violating the civil rights of the citizens of Cleveland. So the city agreed to – after long negotiations, agreed to a consent decree laying out a number of reforms. These are going to take several years to implement, so there was no way those reforms were going to be done in time for the Republican National Convention, and that's what the city is working through now. It creates things like a citizen community police commission that creates guidelines and sort of advises the city on its consent decree, and it also does a number of things involving recruitment and the way cases are investigated. It's a very lengthy document, and it's going to take several years to actually implement.
Dave, you want to weigh in on this at all?
Well, I was going to ask Nick, was this also in light of the shooting of the East Cleveland police with the two motorists?
That was something that happened shortly before, and to fill people in 2012, mm-hmm. there was a police chase that started. Someone drove past Cleveland Police Headquarters. Officers heard what they thought was a gunshot. It turned out it was likely that the car backfired, but police gave chase. About 60 police vehicles ended up chasing this car. They cornered it in a middle school parking lot at night, and that's where 13 officers fired 137 gunshots, killing the two occupants of the car. Again, they say that they believe this person, the two people in the car, had a weapon. They did a search of the car. They did a search of the chase route, including sending a dive team in to check waterways, and no gun was ever found in the vehicle or along the route.
And that was the reason that the federal government, government got involved?
That was, yeah, shortly before there was a request made for the feds to come in.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation, talking with Nick Castell, reporter, producer at WCPN Idea Stream, that is Cleveland's public radio station. Also with us, David Cohen. He's a professor of political science at the University of Akron in Ohio. Both of them getting us up to speed on what's happening this week in Cleveland. Of course, the Democrats coming here to Philadelphia next week for their national convention. And you can join the conversation. Calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more to talk about after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. After a long, contentious, and controversial primary and caucus season, the Republican National Convention is finally underway in Cleveland, Ohio, beginning today and running through Thursday night. In many ways, Ohio has much in common with Pennsylvania, in fact, that they are both Rust Belt states, both considered battleground states, although it should be said that Donald Trump won every county except for one here in the Commonwealth, whereas in Ohio, the governor, John Kasich, was able to beat Donald Trump in their primary. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Dave, is Ohio a red state, blue state, purple state? How would you describe its politics?
Yeah, I would say it's the purplest of purple states. I mean, the reason that we're a swing state every year. And by the way, in 2012, we were the most visited state by both presidential campaigns is because we are as purple as you can get. And so we're roughly 50-50 state. Although if you look at the congressional districts and the state legislative districts, you would never know that because it's completely dominated by Republicans. But that's the result of gerrymandering, not the result of, you know, where the people stand. But it's a 50-50 state. President Obama took the state twice. Before that, George W. Bush took the state twice. So it's a must-have. No Republican has ever won the White House without carrying Ohio, and it's only happened, I think, three times that any other candidate has won the White House without winning Ohio. So it's an important state. It's going to be, you know, we're going to be right in the bullseye again.
You sure are.
And, you know, it's no accident that Hillary Clinton is campaigning yet again in Cincinnati. And both campaigns will be, you know, traversing the state, especially once the conventions are over.
Which means there's probably a blizzard of TV ads in Ohio.
It is nonstop. I mean, you know, if you lived in a place like Idaho or even California, you would never know that there was a presidential election happening in Ohio. And I'm sure, you know, to a similar extent in Pennsylvania, it is, you know, you turn the television on and yep. it's just ads one after another.
Nick, what explains the purpleness of Ohio, do you think?
Well, I think it goes to the diversity of the state. You have, you know, just about equal numbers of Republicans and Democrats living here. You have a lot of major cities in Ohio, and so you've got a lot of, you know, urban Democratic voters. You have a lot of suburbs in Ohio that can be split either way, and you also have rural areas. I think just the mix of people and situations that you have in the state leads us to having this sort of 50-50 mix of you know, Republicans and Democrats.
And how would you describe Cleveland? There was an interesting article yesterday in the New York Times comparing Philadelphia and Cleveland. Philadelphia mm-hmm. has the dubious distinction of having the largest amount of poverty of the top largest cities in this country. How about for Cleveland?
Yeah, I read that article this morning, and Cleveland's up there too. It just happens to be a smaller city. Yeah, the poverty rate is very high in the city of Cleveland, and this is a city that has a lot of neighborhoods that were very hard hit by the foreclosure crisis. People either lost their homes or walked away from their mortgages, and you can drive up and down streets in some neighborhoods and see lots of abandoned houses. And local leaders here are always trying to get together enough money just to demolish these houses, because that's sort of the strategy they've put forward to dealing with just the sheer number of structures that are no longer occupied. I mean, this is all it shows you the effect that the foreclosure crisis had on Cleveland, and also the effect that years and years of a changing economy have had on the city as well.
And Cleveland used to be the biggest city in Ohio, but you know, after many decades, it isn't anymore. Columbus is now the biggest and fastest growing big city in Ohio. And you could compare Cleveland to other industrial Midwestern cities that have struggled, like Detroit or Milwaukee or Philadelphia, et cetera.
I mean, we think of Pennsylvania and Ohio as Rust Belt states. Is that an apt description?
Mm-hmm. I think it is. I know a lot of people get perturbed at that term, but I think the Rust Belt. I usually get hate mail after I say it.
Is
on
that
the radio.
Absolutely. Why is that?
Because people are offended by the term Rust Belt. Mm-hmm. You know, they think it diminishes the region. You know, I just think it's a real good descriptor, though, of you know, the dependence upon industry, really in the northern part of Ohio, especially, and across that Rust Belt region, you know, that extends into Pennsylvania and into Michigan. And I think it's an apt term. And I think Ohio and Pennsylvania aren't terribly different in terms of their politics or in terms of their people.
You want to add to that, Nick?
I was going to say also Cleveland, like a lot of cities all over the country, has seen an influx of young people moving into the city. I'm one of them. And this city of Cleveland has tried to invest in its downtown, especially in new buildings, new apartments. There are new hotels going up. So you are seeing some reinvestment in certain neighborhoods in the city, often around you know, things like restaurants and bars, as well as around big institutions like the Cleveland Clinic, University Hospitals, and Case Western Reserve University. I mean, these big, you know, they call them the eds and meds, but these yeah. big employers that are also doing research are big hubs of innovation, and they're also a place that the city is trying to, build up around.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the economy is changing here in Ohio like it is in so many other places, and really that means a change in terms of industry and changing from things like steel to things like healthcare and high tech.
Nick, let me go back to you and actually a tweet that we got asking about how perhaps poor residents in Cleveland and maybe even other parts of Ohio, does this convention mean anything to people that are perhaps outside of either the political system or even an interest in politics.
Well, I would be surprised if anyone thought that this convention was going to come forward with some solution to a lot of the problems that they're facing. I think people I mean, especially people of all walks of life, I think, are really disaffected with the political system, and they don't have a lot of trust that these big parties are going to provide them with an answer. Another thing to think about, too, is Cleveland is a Democratic stronghold in Ohio. I mean, if you want to win the state of Ohio and you're a Democrat, you need to turn out your base in Cleveland and in Cuyahoga County. So most folks here are Democrats. You know, they didn't like Republicans to begin with. And I think people might see the convention as potentially something that could be good for Cleveland to have. Other people think it might be more trouble than it's worth. But I think most people in the area are not big fans of Republicans. I mean, that's just not how they vote.
Well, and again, a very strong parallels between Cleveland and Philadelphia. Dave, going back to you, how important is trade to a state like Ohio and even trade deals?
Oh, I think trade's very important, and it's something that the state has worked hard at promoting. Northeast Ohio, especially with these growing industries, high tech, and you know, medical, and some of these other industries, you know, trade is important. And you know, it's interesting. You have one Republican, the Republican candidate actually talking and taking a very protectionist stand, going against essentially, you know, 40, 50 years of Republican orthodoxy. And that's a real challenge for the Republican Party because, you know, Trump is really sounding like a protectionist Democrat. And Hillary Clinton in her professional life has been much more pro-free trade than what you're hearing from Donald Trump. So it's interesting because the parties are kind of switching sides. Now, Hillary Clinton in the primary had to move to the left to appease Bernie Sanders and his supporters. I'm not sure that was a position that she'll necessarily stick to once she's president. You know, I think it's an issue that resonates in Ohio. A lot of middle class folks have lost their job, they feel, because of free trade. And Trump, if you notice, the counties that he won in the primaries were all in Appalachia, going all the way up into the Mahoning Valley near Youngstown. And that there's in that area of eastern Ohio, that is union country and steel country. And I think the worry from a lot of Democrats is how well Trump is going to do among blue collar white voters. And that's a real challenge for Democrats because if Trump cuts into that constituency that's normally very pro-Democrat, it's going to be trouble for Hillary Clinton.
But interestingly, Donald Trump picked a Vice President, Mike Pence, who has favored some of these trade deals. So an interesting, I guess, mix of messages coming out of the Republican Party. Nick?
Well, true. Well, I was going to say.
Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, except for the fact that Trump has dismissed pretty much all of Mike Pence's previous positions and pronouncements if you watch that 60-minute interview. So clearly, you know, Pence is really not going to bring his own ideology to the table. It's going to be the Trump worldview, and Pence is going to have to get on board.
And I was going to say something that's interesting about trade in Ohio is, on one hand, you hear Donald Trump when he campaigns in the state. He came in before the primary in March, and he was talking a lot about trade, talking about how trade deals, he said, were bad for the country and bad for Ohio. Well, you hear some of the same rhetoric and arguments coming from the Democratic candidate for Senate in Ohio, Ted Strickland. He's running against incumbent Senator Rob Portman. Ted Strickland is a former governor of Ohio, and his campaign is really trying to link Rob Portman to trade. They're calling him the best senator China's ever had.
Oh, wow.
So it's interesting to hear a similar rhetoric when it comes to trade coming from both the Republican nominee or presumptive nominee as well as a Democratic candidate for Senate.
Dave, is it too soon to predict what's going to happen in Ohio and in November? I apologize for that question. I'm just curious, though.
Don't apologize. I get asked it just about every day.
I figured.
And the answer is yes, it's too early.
It's too early.
Yes. I mean, because, you know, a day is a lifetime in politics. You just never know what's going to happen tomorrow. And it's, you know, we're a couple of months out before we get to November. And right now, I mean, it's looking like a very close race.
Well, and it's so easy every 4 years to say this is the most, you know, momentous election. It's never happened before. Is there something unique, Dave, about 2016?
I think without a doubt. I mean, I think we've never had a presumptive nominee like we have in Donald Trump. I mean, never has there been a candidate, frankly, less qualified and really, in terms of temperament, less ready to be commander-in-chief than the Republicans are about to nominate. And in talking with a lot of Republicans, there's a lot of them are extremely uncomfortable that he's going to be representing that party. So I think Donald Trump is a unique candidate in history, and I think we're at a very interesting time in our history. I mean, the Bernie Sanders challenge showed and the Donald Trump candidacy showed that there's an anger there that some of these candidates are tapping into. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen this fall.
Well, or even what's going to happen this week, Nick. I mean, we know where
you're. Or this afternoon.
Even this afternoon. We know where your governor stands. How about the rest of the party and members of the party that are in Cleveland and going to all these various functions and probably having some speaking engagements as well?
Yeah, they're in sort of an awkward position because, of course, Ohio is a winner-take-all state. You have 66 delegates from the state who were all pledged to John Kasich. And they were, you know, campaigning very hard for their hometown candidate. And now to see him defeated at the end of the day by Donald Trump and not speaking at the convention, here they are at sort of, you know, at somebody else's party. I think it's interesting, you know, this morning the campaign manager for Donald Trump referred to Kasich, his non-endorsement, and said that he's embarrassing the state. Uh-huh. Well, the party chairman in Ohio, the Republican Party chairman, took to Twitter to say, well, you know, Paul Manafort has a lot to learn about Ohio. So you see, even when they're supposed to be coming together right. as a party, there's still tension there, and there's still, you know, it's like they don't really totally trust each other.
And can I say, I mean, Please. It's very telling that, you know, we have a Republican convention, and the only two living former Republican presidents are not going to be there. The last two nominees of the Republican Party will not be there. And that is an enormous sign that this is a party that is anything but unified. And the battles between really the Ohio Republican Party and the Trump campaign, which have gone on for many months, I mean, are also telling of that lack of unity.
How public do you think those fights will be this week, Dave?
With social media and Twitter, I think
there's no privacy anymore, right?
There isn't. No. I mean, there really isn't. So I think we'll know about it, and most of the stories will be probably pretty accurate as, you know, people in the various camps decide to take to social media to air their case. You know, they're trying to put a good public face on it, but I think what Nick just said, you know, the public spat between Paul Manafort and Matt Borges, that's a real problem.
Facebook comment from Martin says, if Trump were to pull out a win, what would the implications of his win be for our greater understanding of the GOP? And again, maybe, Nick, it's too soon to predict what that means, but people are certainly speculating about that. I don't know if you feel comfortable speculating yourself.
Well, I was just thinking about how after the 2012 election, all of the talk was about how the Republican Party needed to become more diverse, needed to do a lot of work reaching out to African-American and Hispanic voters in order to embrace the changing demographics of the country. 4 years later, we're talking about how the Republicans can win white guys. So it just goes to show you that what you're talking about at one point in a political season might not be what you're talking about a couple years later.
Dave, about a minute before you have to say goodbye, that's a good segue just for a quick comment about the platform, which everything that I've read about it is highly conservative in certain ways, almost reactionary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, from what I understand, the Trump people were not that involved in the platform. So I think it's going to be interesting because you have a platform that represents the very conservative wing of the Republican Party. And Trump represents his own new populist wing of the party. And if he's elected, I'm sure that many of those planks in the platform are going to be ignored.
Nick, good places to eat in Cleveland? We're a foodie town here in Philly.
That's right. Well, you know, go by East 4th. It's a little crazy with, you know, all of the networks in town right now. But you can also go to West 65th in Detroit. There's a lot of great stuff around there. So stay out of downtown and you'll find plenty of places that don't have long lines.
Fair enough. Well, thanks so much to both of you. Nick Castell, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. Nick Castell, reporter, producer, WCPN Idea Stream. That's Cleveland's public radio station. And David Cohen with us as well, professor of political science at the University of Akron, helping us understand our neighbor to the west. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about the program. You can also stay with us for hour two, much more from Cleveland, about Cleveland, and also we'll be talking about some of the wildest moments at past conventions, and we've got some clips all queued up for you as well. So do stay with us. We'll be right back.